Well, every generation likes to talk about how it was so much more difficult during their time, right? I had to walk uphill both ways through the snow to school. You've got it so much easier now than I used to. But there is one thing that they did have easier for sure, and that was retirement planning. So today we're going to talk about what's changed, why it's so much more difficult, and things that you need to be aware of heading into retirement. Welcome in to Riverbank Riches, Navigating Financial Wisdom. I'm Ben George with Desmond Taylor at CLC Financial. Do you ever have anybody, maybe your parents or grandparents, Desmond, talk about how tough it was back in their day?
Yeah, I do. I come from my dad's much older than most. He's 75 years old now. So he had me when he was kind of in his midlife. So I definitely get that a lot from him. And then from my grandparents, I'm fortunate to have, on my mom's side, my grandparents still living. And, so I hear it a lot. They're the old people that comes in, I'll bring, my fiance or somebody will come in wearing like, some holes in their jeans. And it's always the joke of, you need a new pair of jeans? I can get you a new pair of jeans.
Yeah.
I've heard that. They're definitely old souls.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we got a list of things we're going to kind of talk through and just really explain why things have changed and why it's more difficult for people now heading into retirement. So that'll be the goal. Again, we'll have another Riverbank Reactions coming up later on too. Got a good video today talking about advisors, and I think this one will be one that Desmond will probably sound off on quite a bit. So stay tuned for that as well. If you have questions for us, the number again, 910-323-5700, and find everything online at clcfinancial.com. All right, we got a list of 10, so we'll kind of run through these. We'll spend a lot of time on each one, but I think this will give you a pretty good idea of how things have changed in terms of retirement. So the first one, I'm sure your parents or grandparents were probably this way. I know my mom was. But job stability, staying with one company for a long time. That's what previous generations used to always do, right? You begin a job, you work forever, you have a pension, you're taken care of when you retire, and you're good to go. But not only is the pension taken away, really, but more or less, people are changing jobs more often, right? So you don't just stay with that one company your entire career.
Yeah, we see that more and more. People are switching careers a lot more frequently. And I think this has a lot to do with what you said about the pension going away. Benefits are tightening up too. So employers are, trying to weigh the costs and benefits of offering different types of benefits. Hopefully, you are with an employer that offer benefits. Those are important. But a pension really kept people around. And they knew that as long as they were staying with that company, that they would be invested in their retirement and making sure that they would, be able to support them in their retirement. And a lot of the employees had a lot of faith in the companies too. And that was a huge decision, rightfully so, making sure that your employer had a pension. And then the 401k came around, and it was actually just it was probably some really smart attorneys at one of these companies. They actually found it, and it was section 401k in the IRS code. And that's where 401k came from, of course. And that actually allowed employers to, because if you think Congress and the government really incentivize these pensions, because, having a population or an aging population that isn't taken care of can be a big drag and can be a big problem, besides moral financially on the country. So having that burden shared with the companies and making sure that the companies have a vested interest in making sure that the people that work there when they retire are well taken care of is important. The 401k came about because some attorneys all identified this within the IRC code, and it actually allowed, it was kind of one company came out and then they said, okay, well, we're going to offer 401k, and it was supposed to meant to supplement or be in addition to the pension. And then they started offering matching. And then all of a sudden you started seeing these pensions really start to phase out. Very few companies now have pensions. I do suspect there could be a comeback on the pensions. I could see that happening in the future. I don't know to what extent, but usually when the pendulum swings drastically in one direction, I mean, this happens in elections and everything. Usually when the pendulum swings in one direction, it swings back and there's some type of balance that's struck. Because finding work is harder now. or finding employees is harder now. So, you know, a company that offers a pension is a huge, huge benefit. Typically now, though, only, you know, governments offer any type of pension. And you know, that's something that people look at is, you know, the salaries may not be as high in these places, but having some type of guaranteed retirement is very, very important.
Yeah, and I want to kind of piggyback this on. I'll skip ahead one on our list we're going to go through because you kind of touched on some things here. But, you know, one of the things that have changed is, you know, there was less reliance on personal savings back in the day. You didn't necessarily have to have a great savings account to your name or have saved a lot on your own because of these pensions and other tools that your employer would handle. But today, you have to have a nice chunk of savings that you put together on your own through investments, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I mean, you know, and that keeps with inflation and everything. You know, that's another thing is salaries are not keeping up with inflation. And going back to that initial conversation of the old, if you look at the price of, and they're saying, oh, you know, I bought my house. Well, it is harder for people that are younger to purchase houses. If you look at the inflation and the cost of housing, even inflation adjusted. So look at the cost of housing, inflation adjusted. Housing is more expensive now. We're now entering into a period too, where the first time, in, I forget, you know, 30 years or something like that, where it's actually cheaper to rent than it is to purchase a house. And that's just because people were able to purchase a house at lower interest rates or the house is already paid for. And so they can rent it, still make a profit, and they don't need to rent it for more than, you know, whatever they're paying the mortgage for the house. So, it's a kind of a contango in the market where that's happening and it's flipped and, it's a, you know, an inverse of how it should be. So having savings, adequate savings now is important, but it's harder to do, right? Because things cost more. So that means that you can put less away. Typically, you know, people would want to maximize their savings. Well, the way that I do it is I put everything away. And then my play money is really after I've planned for retirement, paid all my bills, you know, all of that. And the rest is what I use to spend. Well, now, you know, with people, it starts cutting into, you know, going to the grocery store, starting going out to eat, you know, doing certain things, and everybody wants to live their life, right? So they want to travel, and but all of that's more expensive. So, you know, now maybe people are not saving as much, which can be a huge problem because, again, you know, a generation that will have to be supported because they don't have enough retirement savings is not only a problem for that generation, but it's a problem for the country as a whole.
Well, yeah, I want to kind of continue on. You're touching on a number of things on our list here, so I want to kind of keep going with that. And let's talk about the simpler investment landscape that they used to have too, right? I mean, I think about now, you have the ESG investments, you've got crypto, you've got all these different things you can put your money into. Well, before, I mean, there was a number of options, but not anything compared to what we have to today. And it seems like there's just more and more coming out. So it's just more of a challenge to find where you should even put your money.
Yeah, the market's definitely maturing. And with that just is a wider landscape of products and different securities and offerings. You know, used to, there was really just mutual funds. You may have a pension, you may have some mutual funds, and then you have your savings account. Now, of course, if you get into the high net worth investors, of course, there's, you know, all types of hedge funds and things like that. But to stay away from that for, you know, the point of this topic, really, you have a lot of offerings. And you not only that, you have it at your fingertip too, right? I mean, you download an app and then boom, you have basically the entire market that you have access to, which is great. It really is. But it also, you know, there's a reason that Wall Street wants to appeal to an individual investor. And it's because of, you know, the limited knowledge that an individual investor or a typical investor that's not doing this every day has. And that just comes with higher fees. So they're going to flash, you know, fancy things at you and, you know, you go ooh shiny. And then all of a sudden you're in a fund that's doing performing pretty much exactly as the S&P 500 is, but you're paying higher expense ratios. And you really, until you get close to retirement in that accumulation phase, if you're contributing to your 401k, you really just need to max out your 401k and be in like an S&P fund or, you know, target date fund at the very least, and kind of stay away from everything else, because those ESG funds, and we've done a segment on this too, and I'm kind of passionate about those ESG funds, they're really the same companies that's in the S&P 500 minus or plus a few. And you're paying, you know, sometimes 10 times the fees just to have similar, if not slightly worse performance than the S&P 500. So you have to be really careful about the funds that you're in. And then, you know, there's a lot of data on the market. That's one thing that's beautiful, again, about it being access to everyone and the amount of history that we have on it and when the market dates back and how long is, you know, there's a lot of data that states, you know, just put your money in the S&P 500 until you get close to retirement. The accumulation phase and distribution phase is different, and that's why we adjust your assets in the distribution phase and kind of steer away from the S&P 500 because of the volatility. But when you're young and you're in that accumulation phase and trying to build up for retirement, you know, you just need to have blinders on and not get caught up in the news and what's, you know, happening and everything, because you'll make some bad decisions. And, you know, little decisions, compound interest is a beautiful thing, right? Well, those bad decisions can be compounded over 30 years, and then you can, you know, be out hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Yeah, no question. And you can tell investing is more difficult. If you want help with investment strategy, again, get in touch with CLC Financial. You can always call 910-323-5700. What about higher interest rates? They had the benefit of that in the past. They're, you know, there was able to, you were able to save more in your savings account. Some of these more conservative investments actually provided a decent return. Now, we've had some better rates. We've touched on a little bit here on our last episode about, hey, you know, there are some better rate environments that you can get, take advantage of at this point. But still, for the most part, you're yielding much less than you were previously, which again, puts more pressure on your savings.
Yeah. You know, you go back to the 70s and you see the interest rate and inflation environment then, and at, you know, kind of flash forward to now, it's a similar market landscape. With that is, you do have higher interest rates in your savings accounts, but inflation even in January was a lot higher than I think they expected it to be. So you're battling that. I mean, great, higher interest rates are great. If you are lending the money, right? Or if you're the person that's doing the investment in those interest rates. But then at the same time, you know, everything has a cause and effect, and every action has a reaction. So just remember that the whole reason that they have these high interest rates is to tame inflation. So just because you should take advantage of the high interest rates, but just because, you know, you were able to get a 3 or 4% interest rate a few years ago when inflation was at 2%, and you're getting a 5% interest rate, but inflation's at 8%. Well, I mean, yeah, you're getting a higher interest rate and you may be glad about it, but, you know, you may have a negative net return after inflation. It's just like the Social Security has the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, in it, and that was 8%. But, and people are, you know, woohoo, we got 8%. But remember, you know, they got that 8% because of inflation. So the higher interest rates are great, but you just have to remember why the feds have higher interest rates. Every dollar that the Fed borrows now is also at that higher interest rate. So it's not ideal for the federal government to keep interest rates and sustain that, because they are also borrowing at those higher interest rates, which means that they have a higher interest to pay on this new debt that's issued. So it's unsustainable. So these interest rates are not to give anybody a break. They're to try to tame inflation, which is the much larger beast in the room here, because inflation will just destroy economies, and they know that. So that's why they're having to raise interest rates to try to cool this consumer spending. So you just have to be careful. Again, if you're investing your money and you should be trying to access these higher interest rates, doesn't mean you're getting a higher net return when you factor in inflation, but you don't want to be at 0% or 1% or 2%, because then you're just, you know, that's just negligence right there when it comes to your investments. So, but typically, you know, if you break up your investments, and especially if you're in your retirement phase, we have that long-term 10-year bucket where we're putting stuff in the market, and the market typically outpaces inflation. Very few things will outpace inflation. But, you know, historically, the market has always outpaced inflation. And so you just need to invest your assets accordingly.
All right. We spent a lot of time on investments. Let's shift gears a little bit to some other issues that current retirees faced. And let's start with healthcare costs. I mean, there's no question that previous generations didn't have to spend nearly as much on healthcare, and prices and costs continue to rise, I think at a clip faster than inflation even. So it's been tough to keep up with, but that's a big challenge today.
Yeah, this can be a bit of a political discussion, and I don't want to turn it into that because of the Affordable Care Act that came into place. But I don't think that it's any question to anybody that healthcare is on the rise. The healthcare costs are on the rise, and it comes down again to how do I tread around this? you don't want to, and this is a discussion that can get really in deep and go down a rabbit hole, but. You want to make sure that you have good health coverage. And this goes back now to where, you know, if you're not working for a company that can help subsidize those healthcare costs, then, you know, you can really, I mean, healthcare costs can be $1,000, $2,000, you know, depending on your family and income and all of that. So, you know, before the Affordable Care Act, and there are special situations, you know, where people really did need health coverage. But before that, I know that premiums were cheaper. Now, you could be denied health coverage, but it's not like, you know, America was really letting people die on the street. If you go into an emergency room, you were able to get care. And then Medicaid is for people who are low income. So when, you know, this Affordable Care Act was put in, it really brings a question of, you know, who are you kind of helping here? Because if you truly are low income, or you had some type of disability, or which we should take care of those who have, you know, disability or not able to go out and work and earn an income, and also those families that support them. But there were already special programs for those families. So, you know, the health costs in the U.S. is changing rapidly, and not for a good thing. And the carriers are having to get more aggressive. I mean, locally, United Healthcare has been kicked out of the hospital system. And I don't know if, you know, the exact reasoning behind it. I haven't been, you know, directly into discussions of the two managements on why that happened, but you know, I suspect that it could be a cheaper decision for United to play, you know, these types of chicken with these hospital systems, because it could at the end of the day be, you know, saving them money. And I don't know that for a fact, but I'm just trying to think of, you know, why is somebody denying claims or what? And it's every time a insurance company needs to raise premiums too, they have to go back to the federal government and ask to raise those premiums. You see this happening too with property and casualty insurance. You know, you look at down in Florida, they're talking about, you know, the state's going to have to step in to subsidize these insurance companies because of bad claims. So it's an interesting, you look at other countries and you see the free healthcare that they have, and a lot of people talk about them. But we have the best doctors. The U.S. has always been pioneers of medicine. And, you know, in order to have the best, you need to pay the best. And so you don't want to, you know, just put a cap on how much a doctor, because then they'll just go somewhere else. You know, doctors, they went to 10 years of med school. They're not just going to and sacrifice, you know, half their life. So you want the best. So I don't know an easy fix for this or answer, but healthcare costs are on the rise. We do health insurance. We have guys here that do health insurance and Medicare, and they can switch you. They have availability to any company that's out there. And so it's important now, it seems, to not only pick something that's good for you, but when we see companies actually not paying claims or being kicked out of hospital, now you almost need somebody who will put you with a company that just has a good reputation. Because last thing that you want is to be on a health plan, and then, you know, you not be able to get coverage a month or two after you just enroll, and now you have to wait till open enrollment to switch healthcare providers. So it's important, and I would really suggest, I would really suggest talking with somebody about healthcare, whether you're young and you're trying to get, you know, just health insurance or ACA or Medicare. It's gotten so complicated now that, and expensive as well, that you really, this is one of the things that you need to talk to somebody about. And you don't pay that person anymore. That person gets paid regardless of the carrier who he puts you with, and you pay the same premium whether you go through him or not. So it's really important to talk to somebody and get that that situation and give them your situation and circumstances so you can get it the best possible.
All right, as we talk about challenges that face retirees today versus previous generations, one that you kind of alluded to a little bit earlier when we were talking about, you know, pensions and savings and stuff like that, is the sandwich generation. There weren't these challenges previously, really, of people having to take care of both, you know, aging parents, but also their children as well that may be getting older, that are don't have a stable job, aren't earning enough money, or maybe deciding to live at the house a little bit longer. But these challenges continue to kind of be on the rise, and you're seeing more and more of this, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more, you know, I would say millennials and Gen Z living with their parents than probably before previous generations. You know, I haven't really looked into this a lot and the studies behind it, just because it's kind of a matter of the fact that it is. But I think, you know, some people would argue parenting and things like that. But cost, again, it's just going to go back to the cost. Cost of living has gone up. And, you know, when you get into a situation where, you know, renting is cheaper than purchasing a home, well, most people want to purchase a home. They don't want to rent forever. You know, despite a bunch of, I mean, you can find a ton of information out there, and I would probably stay away from it, that says, you know, rent versus buy. But, and we could get into that session at a different time, but it's just the cost of living, you know, and it's hard to put any type of fault to them, because it is true. It's harder to, you know, cover the cost. And so this is where you get into, you know, well, maybe you just have, a couple of people living in a home with you. It's not ideal. You know, eventually you want to move out of your parents' house and you don't want to have to move back in with your parents. And you want to make sure that everybody has enough in retirement to take care of, you know, them on themselves. Now, of course, in later years, you know, there could be medical reasons, but you don't want to ever run into a financial circumstance because of that. So planning and then making sure that your assets last. And that's where, you know, talking to somebody to making sure that when you retire, that you are able to sustain your lifestyle for a long, 95 years old is where we plan most of our clients out. And you don't want to run into a situation where your assets run out before then.
Yeah, that's the worry, right, for everyone. So, no part of that too that plays into this is life expectancies. Your money has to last longer. So not only do you have to have more in many cases saved up, it's got to last longer of time than previous generations. It's great that we're living longer, Desmond, that we're healthier, but
yeah,
it's also harder.
Yeah, you know, making sure again that longevity, because medicine's getting a lot better. Healthcare costs are high, but people are living longer. And that could be another reason why, you know, attributed to why healthcare costs are going up is people's living longer. And as you get older, you have more health complications. And of course, you have to go to the doctor more. You have to have more procedures. These procedures are specialties, cost more, things like that. But it is a good thing that people are living longer. So you need to make sure that you adjust your lifestyle to span out. I mean, you know, we talked about different things that are going to happen in retirement. In that distribution phase. And one of them is, you know, chances are that one person or one spouse will pass away first. And just by nature of that, your taxes are going to go from a joint filer to a single filer. And then, you know, when you leave assets to a beneficiary, those assets now follow, they're not based off the old system, which was you stretch those RMDs out over the rest of your life or the uniform lifetime table. Now it's 10 years. So it is, it's important to make sure that you plan, your retirement, to live longer and also your estate as well, and make sure that you have everything planned and, you know, power of attorneys, medical power of attorneys and all of that set in place because, chances are you're going to be living a lot longer than your parents or grandparents were.
All right. So this last one that I want to finish with, this again, maybe a bit of a political discussion. You could go down and probably spend a long time on it, but Social Security, you know, the bottom line is there was more contributors to it for previous generations. So it was well funded, but now as we have more people aging into retirement and fewer people paying into the system, why we've kind of, this balance has been a little bit out of whack. So I know there's a big concern over what's the future of Social Security. Don't need a prediction necessarily, but how do you work this into your planning when you're thinking about, okay, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with Social Security, what changes might take place. How do you prepare for that?
This is also one of the things that was implemented by, the boomers. And they implemented Social Security. And, you know, then you look at who is in Congress and who's in the Senate. And I don't want to turn this into a political discussion or anything like that. But you look at who implemented Social Security and then you look at who's in control and who's actually, you know, you're right. There was more people paying into it, but there also wasn't all these government programs that were drawing from it. And I don't want to turn this, I'm stressed again, don't want to turn this into a political discussion, but you had something that was working and then you wanted to tap into it with different various social programs. And now we're in a situation where it looks like Social Security could run out of money in 10 years. Now, with that said, I don't see Social Security going away because our country is ran by politicians. We are not going to vote for those who are going to do away with Social Security. You look at some of the candidates up there now, like Nikki Haley, she's made some pretty drastic calls on Social Security and what she would do in reform. And those were really unpopular decisions. It's been talked about before. It's been discussed for, you know, decades about Social Security and if it runs out of money. But the fact of it is there's a huge voting population that is on Social Security. As you get older, you tend to pay more attention to politics and you tend to, you know, vote in the elections. And so a vast majority of the voting population and continuing forward will be voting that are taking Social Security. So, you know, I don't think you have to worry about Social Security going away so much as maybe the tax going from, you know, the top bracket now is 85% of your Social Security can be taxed, going to 100%. It used to be 0%. Again, I could see it going to 100% of your Social Security can be taxed. And you don't want to make a rash Social Security decision. I don't see Social Security going away. They're going to keep funding it. How they're going to do it, you know, how do they keep funding everything else? So, you know, printing money, which leads to inflation, but they're going to come up with some way to sustain it. I think the generation, my generation, will have a vastly different social security than they do now, just because of where the funds or how they fund social security is. It'll still be around, but it's going to be a lot different. I don't see any change happening, big change happening, though, in the next 10 years, just because I don't think they've really worked out on how they can change it and still get elected. You know, last year they did the highest cost of living adjustment ever, I'm pretty sure it was ever, at least in the last 30 years or so. It was around 8%. And so a lot of people were saying, oh, Social Security is going to go away, it's going to go bankrupt. Well, they just gave the highest raise in Social Security last year. So let's settle down. It's not going away. It will change, though.
Yeah, I think it was maybe 8.7 even percent. I don't remember.
It was definitely a high number. Close to 9.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some interesting things to think about. But again, this is a reminder why it's even more important, too, to have somebody on your side to work with to help you work through these different issues, build strategies to help you reach retirement the way you want to and be able to live the retirement the way you would like to as well. So clcfinancial.com. Learn more about Desmond and the team there at CLC. But also you can call 910-323-5700. All right, time now for our Riverbank reactions. We have a good one that you found this week, Desmond. I think the thumbnail says the dirty truth about financial advisors. So let's take a look, watch this real quick, and then we'll get your reaction.
Let me tell you the dirty truth about financial advisors. In today's world, you don't need one. Watch the financial advisors in the comments. Just for comedy, I Googled, do I need a financial advisor? And guess what popped up? A sponsored ad. None other than Edward Jones. Finances are really easy, FYI. But the industry is going to confuse you on purpose so that you're reliant on them. But in today's age, you don't need a financial advisor. And if you use one, good luck. You're going to pay 1%. It doesn't sound like much, but let me show you. Times have changed. The old stats saying you need an advisor are outdated. Education is everywhere, and as long as you're not emotional, you don't need a financial advisor. People like myself are teaching people all over the world exactly how to own their own finances. If you invest $500 a month for 30 years at 1% AUM, getting a 7% nominal return, you're going to pay $100,000 in fees. You could do that, or you could just pay for education up front and avoid it altogether. And what they don't tell you are the hidden fees on top of the AUM. So beware.
Yeah, so, you know, he does bring up a couple of good points on it. But I'll say with this one, you know, if you take his, so if you just go to this guy's Instagram and then you go and you search, he actually offers classes, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So he says, he's like, hey, you don't need a financial advisor. I teach people how to control their finances. It's like, okay.
you don't need to pay for help for guidance with your finances, but pay me to help you with your finances.
Right. Yeah. You go to his Instagram and then you go to his page and he's got these courses on how to manage your finances. So, and then in the beginning of the video, he's like, you know, financial advisors are going to, and I think that's more why we did this video, because he's trying to say, hey, look at them. They're going to comment. Yeah, I'm going to comment on that, because you are essentially trying to act in the capacity of a financial advisor with one problem. What licensing or what does he hold for accountability on any of this? You know, if we're fiduciaries, if we mess up something or we aren't acting in your best interest, we get in trouble. We can get our license taken. He is offering a class that you pay for. So I think my guess is that technically he's not falling under the fiduciary standards on there. So he's probably just going to tell you, hey, you know, buy this thing that it's like Ramsey. Hey, life insurance, buy term, invest the difference. Oh, by the way, we offer term life insurance. Go to our website to buy it. And so these guys are pretty much the same on there. They're trying to, you know, paint this bad picture on an industry that they're in. And I think that they don't, you know, they're trying to get views and get attention away. You're paying him a fee, and regardless of how your investments perform, he doesn't really care. When you have your assets held with a financial advisor, not going to comment on Edward Jones, but even Edward Jones, typically it's in a wrap account. That's how we do our clients, is we have a wrap account, and we have a vested interest in making sure that your assets perform, because, you know, again, we're paid a fee, right, out of those assets. If those assets go to zero, don't have much of a business model here. So, you know, we want to make sure and take care of our clients. We've been in business for 50 years. and we take extreme pride in taking care of our clients. We're not just going to sell you a stock or some program and then leave you to hang out in the dry. So I'd just be careful of those. You know, he does bring up some good points about the vast knowledge that you have available, but it's like anything else. It's sifting through that knowledge. There's misinformation out there more so now than ever, right? I mean, there's AI that can just type up an entire article and it can just be completely wrong, but it's very, very convincing. So sifting through that misinformation is very important, and making sure, you know, our generation can be skeptical of things that our fathers or past generations have used. And one of those is financial advisors. And there's a reason for that, is because they work. You know, most people that have sustained their retirement, and you look at, you know, just look at the data of performance of an individual investor trying to manage their retirement versus working with an advisor. And this is in the distribution phase. You know, cancel out the accumulation phase. If you're contributing to a 401k, you probably don't need somebody until you get about 5 to 10 years away from retirement. You just need to utilize your company match, and you need to invest in S&P or target date funds. Once you get 5 to 10 years away from retirement, that's when you need to start planning for it. And you're not trying, like he said, that 7% fee. You're not trying to target a 7% fee. That's, you know how much volatility comes with achieving 7, 8, 9, 10% in the market? Most people need around 5%. So it's volatility management, and it's trying to make or minimize, it's trying to make you money when the market has off years, or minimizing losses when the market, that's our job. That's where we come into play, is for CLC, us, we are dealing with retirement planning, we're dealing with wealth management. So our job is to achieve a target return and minimize those down years through, you know, different various financial strategies, options, everything that we employ to do that, not just throwing you in a fund and saying, hey, we hope you do the best, which is what I think, where you can get the bad rap a lot of times.
Yeah, good summary. A couple of things that stood out to me when he thought the gotcha, the Edward Jones sponsored ad. I mean, that's just the day and age we live in. That's just how people advertise now. That's just marketing, right?
Somebody searches that. Ads.
Exactly. If somebody searches financial advisor, you want to pop up. So that's actually pretty good on Edward Jones. The other part was he said, as long as you're not emotional, you can do this. And it's like, that's the hardest part, right? Is everybody lets emotion seek in, and it's hard to do that by yourself. So really interesting there. But yeah, take it with a grain of salt, a big grain of salt. But we appreciate your reaction as always, Desmond.
Yeah, I love doing those because, again, it always comes down to those guys of, hey, don't listen to this. By the way, I got a program for sale over here.
So. Exactly. Very good. Well, we'll close out our episode today of Navigating Financial Wisdom here on Riverbank Riches with Desmond Taylor. You can always get in touch, clcfinancial.com, or as always, you can call 910-323-5700.
Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, a registered investment advisor. CLC Financial Services, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC are not affiliated. Medicare products are not offered through Creative One Securities, LLC. They may be purchased through a licensed insurance professional. We are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of investment and insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. This material has been prepared for informational and educational purposes only. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Insurance and annuity products are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company. We are not affiliated with any government agency. Diversification does not ensure profit or guarantee against losses.